Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show, streaming live on BDS Radio from California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally. I'm your show host, Yvonne E.L. Silva. My mission is to uplift the spirit of humanity, and I do that by showcasing amazing women who've risen from tragedy to triumph, from a point of chaos to confidence, risen to success, and are now making a huge contribution to their community and sometimes globally as well. As a female founder and entrepreneur, a certified executive coach and chartered HR professional, I've helped thousands of people, women in particular, find excellent career choices, grow their businesses, and in the past 10 years, supported women to excel in their leadership and especially in their confidence. So today, I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are ready to flourish in business, to expand and engage their team, to grow their business with ideal clients for more sales and a more sustainable business that's fun. And we can have balance as female entrepreneurs and be great role models for our children. And a very important piece of our opportunity for balance and growth is showing up confidently. And today I am lucky enough to have a beautiful guest, Rasha Eldib, sharing her story of rising from tragedy to triumph. So welcome, Rasha.
I thank you so much for having me on the show. It really means a lot.
You are so welcome. Rasha is the founder for Nadia's Hope Foundation, and herself has gone through an amazing transformation over the past few years based on what happened with her sister. For those of you who are listening in from Calgary, Alberta, at the base of the Rocky Mountains, where I am today, you may be familiar with the story. There's certainly been a number of events over the course of November, especially, that are exploring, you know, how do domestic abuse situations arise? You know, how can we make an important dent in the rising statistics? And we really do need to reverse what's happening, especially for women, enabling women to feel safe, to be confident, and to flourish in life, because we make such a massive contribution. And being excellent, confident role models, I believe we can make a significant impact. So maybe we could start, Rasha. I know that, you know, I'm going to start with just offering my sincere condolences, because this is the first time we have spoken live. We've done a lot of conversation over Messenger and other electronic sources. But my sincere condolences on the loss of your sister and what happened with her. It's so tragic. I think it's important to sort of set the stage for the listeners, and then we can dive into what you've learned about the abuse statistics and how we can watch out for the signs, you know, what we need to do differently, how can we protect ourselves, and dive mm-hmm. into a little bit more of the, you know, what can we do about it, the positive side of things. So can we start with what happened, in your own words, to share your story, what happened with Nadia?
Yeah, of course. So on March 25th, 2018, I was just waking up. It was a Sunday, and I received messages from my mom being frantic about not knowing where Nadia was, because she was the type that she was out late or she was staying over somewhere. She would always tell us or text or call, and so we didn't hear from her all day. And what happened is I went out looking for her, just tracing her steps. Fortunately, I ended up at her crime scene, and I was approached by some detectives, and they told me that they were from the homicide department, and I had to go in for questioning. And it was just such a shock and such a time of wondering what was going on, because I wasn't aware of the situation. So it ended up being that Nadia was seeing this guy for only about 3 months in late 2017, but she broke off the relationship because she saw that he had some toxic behaviors and traits. So they ended things, and he ended up stalking her after they broke up, and he was trying to get back with her, but she kept saying no. Ended up being a form of, if I can't have you, nobody else can. So unfortunately, he decided to murder her, and it was in a very, very violent way. He unfortunately ended up picking her up and driving around in this car refusing her to take her back home. And we knew that because she called a friend at around 4 a.m. and she was telling her that, you know, he wasn't taking her back to her car, but she wanted to go home because my family was going to be worried. And he drove her, he kept driving, and then he parked in the back alley at one point. And then he took a knife that he had, and he stabbed Nadia about 40 times. And she was able to get out of the car, luckily, but he was armed. He legally purchased a semi-automatic rifle, and he took that and shot Nadia for the first time. She fell to the ground, and then the second time he shot her on the side of the head. And that he ended up fleeing from Calgary, and he was on the run for a few days. But he ended up being found by the RCMP police, and he didn't want to turn himself in. So there was like a police chase and a shootout. He got out of the car right away and started shooting at the police officers. What ended up happening is they ended up killing him because Jay would just not stop or turn himself in. So that happened a few days before her funeral, which was on an Easter weekend. So it gave a little bit of closure when that happened.
Yeah. Wow, that is some pretty intense stuff going on. I mean, really, you know, that whole piece about if I can't have you, no one's going to have you. I mean,
yeah,
it really does take I believe, I'm not a psychologist or a counselor, but just based on what you've shared, I truly believe nobody stabs somebody that many times without some intense anger and psychological issues. I mean, that's so tragic. So let's just take a breath for a minute here, because that's pretty intense. I just want to just play some music for a minute here.
Sure.
Thank you, Nadia, for sharing so honestly and in such a detailed way what happened. And again, so tragic. Condolences, you know, really don't express what I feel about this. So what I am very much wanting to do with these shows is to showcase, you know, where there has been a tragedy and where the person I'm interviewing, the lady I'm interviewing, has risen from that and is now doing amazing things. So you founded Nadia's Hope Foundation afterwards. I don't know what the time period was. So, you know, tell me a little bit about how that got started and what work the foundation is doing.
For sure. We incorporated Nadia's Hope Foundation in April of 2019. So we just decided that we wanted to start something in Nadia's name that will honor her forever. And at first it was just incorporating it and wanting to do public speaking events. But the more that I started going out into the public, the more ideas I got about how to be able to share Nadia's stories in a very educational way. So speaking events are still happening. But the most important thing that we've done is we went into high schools in Airdrie in Alberta with RCMP officers and with victim services. We did presentations to grade 10s, 11s, and 12s in each high school. So we talked about Nadia's story, but the RCMP was also there to talk about the legal aspects of domestic abuse and what things you can report and things that they see in the community. So it was really important to really have that personal factor, but also have the RCMP there to talk about everything. And victim services was there as well, so they're counselors, and they had a therapy dog, which was great. So if any of the teens needed anybody to talk to, they were able to do that afterwards and give resources if they wanted to reach out. So the most important component was, yes, sharing Nadia's story, but it's also talking about the warning signs and what to look for in relationships, what isn't healthy. So it is about domestic abuse, but also what healthy relationships look like so that the teens can have this information, because that's when they start dating and they can take that and also have that for the rest of their lives as well, but also in their current situation to see if their relationship might be healthy or not, because they don't really have access to that information. And so to be able to present that in a way that you don't have to single anybody out, but you give it just to the general, to the school, that's kind of the best way that we found to approach with this information.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like an excellent way to get the early education for sure, and also to help young women realize that, you know, it's very rarely your fault, for starters. And secondly, that there is a variety of resources and supports in place that can help you, and don't be afraid to reach out to the police. I mean, certainly having, police in schools, I have seen as being a great resource, a great support. So excellent work that you're doing in the awareness and education piece. So let's get the word out and tell me more, because I've watched recently a few different news clippings, but the one that shocked me the most was the fact that, you know, over 10,000 in the past year, over 10,000 women and seniors, they were quoting, have actually stayed in shelters because they have been afraid for their lives. In a 66% face risk of being killed by an intimate partner. I mean, that's a tremendous stat, and it's been the highest in, 7 years? I gather from the Alberta Council of Women's Shelters, some of their data. 60,000 crisis calls coming in. I mean, these are crazy, horrendous statistics, and we have to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So what can we do? Tell me about, if you were aware that there was an issue brewing, what were some of the signs that you saw or have now learned that are really things that we need to pay attention to, both for ourselves and also to watch out for in others?
For sure. And with Maggie's situation, unfortunately, she was a person that was really reserved and didn't want to worry my family. So we weren't aware of any of the incidences that happened until after she was killed. But her friends were aware of the stalking that he had done over the course of months, showing up to our house, and we didn't know. We got a hold of her phone, and we saw text messages ranging from, I love you, I want to be with you forever, to the next second, if she wasn't answering right away, calling her vile names and telling her that she's cheating on him, and that, so we had this really back and forth personality. And even when they were in public, he didn't want her to talk to other men, because he would say, well, we're in a relationship, you shouldn't be talking to other men, and it makes me upset, and I don't want you to do that. And she was a very outgoing person. So whenever she would be in public settings, she would just be friendly with everybody. And he didn't like that, because he had this controlling personality and only wanted to keep her for himself. So whenever they were in public, he would get really angry with her, and he would see that she wasn't listening to him, and she was just being friendly with everybody. And he felt like, well, you shouldn't be doing that. It upsets me. And she would say, well, they're my friends. I'm not going to get rid of my friends or stop being the way I am just because it makes you uncomfortable. And if she was wearing clothing that he didn't approve of, he would, one time she was wearing like a off-the-shoulder top, he took his coat and put it on her shoulders, and he said, I don't want other people looking at you, so I want you to wear this. And she took it off, and she's like, well, I'm wearing what I'm wearing, you can't tell me what to wear. And her friends, unfortunately, saw all of this behavior as romantic. So they would say, well, he's covering you, like he really cares about you and wants to protect you, or he's stalking you, that's how much he loves you and wants you back. And so that's the type of behavior that we want to change as well, in that mentality of what's romanticized. And I do believe that, yes, it is important to look for warning signs and red flags in your own relationship and of others. But unfortunately, that's not the only solution, because what happens, the perpetrator is going to have a target, whether it be you who knows the warning signs and leaves the relationship, or they are going to target somebody else. So as much as it is important to know that, it's also important to hold perpetrators accountable, because if you're not in the relationship, they're probably seeking out somebody else to control and to abuse. That's the really hard part about domestic abuse and tackling this issue, is that unfortunately there's not only one solution to this, which makes it extremely complicated.
Mm-hmm. So from your, I'm sure you've done a ton of research afterwards as you've been collaborating with different resource agencies. So, you know, the jealousy, the erratic behavior, the controlling, the demanding, you know, the difference between being intense versus romantic, you know, what are some of those other signs? What can we watch for?
Of course. And that's the thing, like it's hard because you don't want to say this specific thing means that they're being abusive, because then it'd be really hard to kind of look for those warning signs. It's more of like a combination of things. So it is the controlling, as to, like what the perpetrator was telling Nadia what to wear, but it was also about his anger and the text messages that we saw. And the biggest component is also stalking. So stalking is really important to report, because unfortunately it doesn't stop there. People think that eventually it'll go away, or that, you know, like that they will stop doing that. But it actually leads to more, like, based on the research that I've done, is it never stops at stalking. And people who have committed homicides, there's always a backstory of stalking as well. So it's really important to know that stalking doesn't stop there. And it's really important to report it, so that at least there's a file to say that they have this history. Because the perpetrator, it wasn't just with Nadia. We learned it with previous relationships. He stalked as well, another one of his exes. And this person didn't report it because it eventually just stopped. But it came to the point where this ex's mom almost called the police on him, but it didn't come to that point. But again, it's this continuous behavior. So abusers don't change unless they go out and seek the help. So that's why it's so important to see those signs, because, okay, they might stop stalking you for a little bit, but it doesn't stop there. They're going to stalk somebody else, or they're going to come back. So stalking, again, it just doesn't end where it's really, they see a lot of correlation with homicides and stalking, is that a lot of the time they've done both.
Right. Yeah, I mean, certainly I'm a huge CSI fan, you know, and so I watch, you know, I watch a lot of before and after shows where they are really digging into what's really going on underneath, you know, psychology, psychiatry, etc. I mean, I'm a coach, I'm not a counselor, but that whole concept of what's really going on and then how to move forward from it, that's obviously a big part of the work that I do. So it intrigues me. And, you know, certainly when you see there's a history of, you know, preying on small animals, or, you know, putting you know, masking tape around a cat or a dog's face, or those kind of things. I mean, they're all things that are unacceptable behavior that very often go back to younger years and some sort of trauma that is now being carried on. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, there is some sort of mental illness going on, and we don't necessarily know that. And when you're being pursued and you're a teenager girl, you know, it's not that long ago for me that I don't remember. Yeah. It's flattering. So we can report them. So what else can we be doing? I mean, if you had Nadia sitting in front of you today, is there anything that you would share with her that you've learned now over the past few years that might have, you know, might have had an impact, might have changed things?
Yeah, and that's kind of a big message that we want to portray as well, is that it's preventable, right? Like Nadia's situation, it could have been prevented if the friends had taken action, or if we did, if we knew what was happening, if she was more open with us about the stalking and about his behavior, we would have taken some more measures to make sure that she was not alone, or that I would have reported him myself. But it's unfortunately easier to look back on things rather than in the moment. And that's the important part of education, because if Nadia had approached me at that time, I don't know what I would have done or said. I probably would have given the wrong message, like a lot of people are. So that's where it's really important to talk about what are the right and wrong things to say when somebody approaches you about this situation. So you don't want to ever be judgmental. You never want to judge them and tell them that it's their fault. You never want to say things like, well, you know that this makes him upset, you shouldn't be doing this, which is what her friend would say. They would say, well, you know that he doesn't like when you wear these types of outfits, you should just be more conservative. And she, you know, that's never something you want to say. You never want to judge them or tell them that it's their fault, or that they instigated their behavior, their anger. The accountability is always towards the abuser. There's nothing that you can ever say or do that would justify any type of abuse. and you really want to let them know that you're there for them regardless. So this is where it's really important as well, that you don't want to force them to do anything that they don't want. So you don't want to say things, well, we'll leave the relationship, because leaving the relationship is actually the most dangerous part. The research shows that the months during and after leaving somebody is the most dangerous part and where we see the highest rates of domestic homicides. Right. So it's also really important to have a correct safety plan if you feel like you're in danger, because it's so dangerous during that time period, and you're actually 6 times more likely to be murdered when you leave a relationship. And so that's also a really scary factor, and you don't want to tell somebody to leave right away. What you want to do is tell them, I'm here for you, this is the resources that are available, and I'm here to listen. And whatever you need, I'm here for you. But if I can't be there for you, these are resources that can help you. And they are available. There are a lot of hotlines that you can call that don't directly report to the police. There's anonymous hotlines where you can have safety planning, or you can get advice to see if maybe your relationship is or isn't healthy. So it's really important, again, just that education component, to have this information, so that if you have somebody in your life or even yourself that's in an abusive situation, you know how to go about it, and you're not, you know that there's resources and also people that you can rely on.
So important. And I think it's, you know, it's natural that if something is going wrong in the relationship and you have those spidey senses and your gut instinct mm-hmm. is that something's spiraling out of control here, would be to leave. And so it's very useful to understand that is a period where there's really more likely to be triggers going on. 6 times more likely, holy smokes, that's horrific.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a safety plan. Well, I think what I'd like to do is just to take a short break for a minute, and then we'll come back to the safety plan. The reason I'm suggesting mm-hmm. that is I was able to connect quite a few months ago when Conway Cantor first came to Calgary. Laura Hambury-Lovett had brought her to Calgary to show her docudrama, Trafficked. And that was, again, a horrific example of women being abused and kept captive, and the stories mm-hmm. and the young ages of women, of girls being impacted was terrifying.
Yes.
And I know that you recently also were able to be part of the With Her evening that Laura shared and put together with some colleagues, and Conway was there. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that there are some very early things that girls can do, that women can do, in terms of demonstrating confidence so that they're not even considered as a potential target. And mm-hmm. this connects back to the work that I've been doing over the past couple of years. So when I wrote my book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, a lot of the language that we use invites in, when it's not a powerful conversation, a powerful sentence, it invites in criticism or feedback or people that feel that we are weak. So using powerful, confident mm-hmm. language makes a difference. And also being very clear on what our non-negotiables are. So we're not willing to be treated in that fashion. And if that is something that is nipped in the bud early, then maybe the relationship wouldn't go so far down the road in terms of months or days or seeing the person for a long while, and get so complicated and tangled, and then needing to be that sort of aggressive response to when it ends. So I just want to play mm-hmm. the video. It's actually a video, but it's an audio clip as well, that talks about the reason I wrote the book. And I think that'll be useful, because I do have a gift to offer at the end to anyone listening. So let's just run that clip.
Okay.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business, by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.
I think that the book is a powerful tool for change, certainly to help women and girls have more confident conversations from the outset. And when the movie Trafficked was being aired again just recently, I had a chance to talk with Patrick Duffy, who's one of the lead stars, actors in the movie. We talked a little bit about this element of confidence. You know, if if a girl is displaying a confident stance, a confident demeanor, she's standing tall with her head straight. She's not, you know, curling her shoulders in, looking down all the time. Just that difference will make her less approachable for someone who is, either wanting to move into a trafficking situation or perhaps, again, feeling that this is someone that can be controlled. So I think it's a huge message. The book video was put out November of last year, or November 2018, but I still think it's very relevant in terms of why that book is such an important piece to get a copy. So let's talk about the safety plan and the resources available. So what does a safety mm-hmm. plan look like?
According to the RCMP and also the resources who plan who have the safety planning, it's all based on the situation, and they're all unique in different ways. So unfortunately, there's not one way to go about the safety planning, but the resources are available through the police as well as the women's shelter that we have here in Calgary. So safety planning is a lot about how to really get out of the situation without putting yourself at risk, or if you have kids or you have pets as well. So recently, I didn't think about it either, but the women's shelter, they opened up a couple of rooms that are dog friendly and pet friendly. So a lot of the time when women want to leave and they have a pet, sometimes that gives them a big struggle actually to leave because they don't know where to go if they have a pet. So the women's emergency shelter is actually the first in Alberta to do this. They opened up a couple of rooms that are pet friendly, and they did that in honor of Aaliyah and Jasmine, a couple of, unfortunately, a mother and a daughter that were killed in Calgary this year. So this program was done in their honor. So there's things like that we don't think about either, is that there's safety planning, but because you have a pet or you have kids or you don't have the financial capacity to do so. But safety planning is a lot of the times being able to leave when the perpetrator is at work or is at a moment where you're not in a dangerous situation. So it's all based on the circumstances. So if you're in a really dangerous situation, those are times where they're able to go to the shelter and have the proper resources. But police and as well as the shelter, they accommodate based on the situation. So the safety planning is dependent on every person.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly every situation is going to be unique. And if there's young kids involved or pets, that certainly puts a different slant on things. And, I've heard some statistics in the past that, the more children you have, the less likely you are to leave the relationship, which made a lot of sense to me. I mean, if you have four kids that are going to be impacted if the couple split up, then there's mm-hmm. certainly a lot more thinking and planning that would need to happen in order to decide if that is the best thing for everybody. Yeah. I just want to put out the fact that this is a live show on BBS Radio, and so you certainly can be listening online or listening to the show through the phone as well, but you can also call into the show. So if you have questions either for Russia or myself, you can dial in on 888-627-6008, which is connecting to Station 1, or also a direct line if the 888 number doesn't connect for you at 323-744-4831. And I'll repeat those numbers again shortly. So we've got individual situations, we've got individual mental illnesses and, coming to the table, things that, we never dream are in place when we meet a new person. So what else can we do to reverse these staggering statistics?
There's a few ways I believe to go about reducing these statistics. So prevention is definitely a big one, and that's what we're hoping to do with these presentations. But it's also about, I believe, introducing ways in schools to see and to be more aware of youth or kids that have behaviors that maybe they should go see a counselor or that they should be more attentive to. Because as a parent, you never want to imagine that you're that your child would be capable of anything like this. And it's a huge responsibility to put on school teachers to see if there's certain behaviors of youth or kids that might lead to an outcome of being abusive. But I believe that it's really great to target at a younger age because, like you were saying before, abusers a lot of the times have a common denominator, which is abuse in their childhood. So whether they've seen it or experienced it, it also can be something like a cultural norm or just something that you grew up with where you see that your parents are behaving in a certain way that you think is like a traditional, you know, that's how a marriage should be or a relationship should be. So it's also really important as parents to show how a healthy relationship and marriage should be. But of course, if you're not getting that at home, then how do you know what is and isn't an abusive relationship? There's also a great thing that's being introduced in Alberta by the conservative government is there's going to be Claire's Law that's going to come hopefully pretty soon. So what that is, it was first introduced in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, and they have it in Saskatchewan and now in Alberta, where you can actually look up the history of somebody if they've ever been, if they ever have a file against them of abuse in the past. So that's also really important. If you're going on a date for the first time or if you're seeing somebody, you can look up on the internet or on I believe, the government website to see if this person has had a past of abusive relationships, and that way you decide how you want to go about the relationship. So it's because, of course, somebody who you're about to date, they come off as really charming, they come off as very loving, they're not abusive on the get-go. So that's unfortunately their way of manipulating somebody, is they come off as somebody who's a great person, they charm the people around you and yourself, and then they later show on that abusive behavior. So if you're able to kind of get that warning before you even start this relationship, then that can also be a really great preventative measure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Saskatchewan started or introduced Claire's Law with that intention of, you know, preventing or reducing domestic violence because they had one of the highest violence rates in their own province. And so, you know, they definitely wanted to take action because there was the strongest need there. It's definitely encouraging to see that that's being shared across into other provinces. So absolutely. So I'm curious. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, know. Yes, go ahead.
Please finish your thought.
Okay. As mentioned before, Alberta is unfortunately seeing an increase in domestic abuse, and it's because there is a lot of correlation with, unfortunately, the economy right now brings a lot of stressors. But like you said before as well, with the Me Too movement, there's a lot more reporting of domestic abuse, which is in a way good because at least people are coming forward and telling their stories, which is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So just again, for those people that were thinking, I have a question, the dial-in number is either 1-888-627-6008 or direct dial is 323-744-4831. So you yourself, I'm not sure exactly how old you are, and you don't have to share that, but I know you to be a young woman.
Yes.
How has this changed you, and you know, how have you grown as a person throughout this whole ordeal?
Yeah, of course. So at the time that of Nadia's murder, I was in my last semester of university. I was 25 at that time, and I was finishing my semester and getting my degree in Bachelor of Arts in Sociology. So it happened the last month and a half of my degree, so that spiraled my life into a place where I had my life together. I had savings and I was planning on, you know, buying a place in Calgary and wanting to maybe get into law school eventually or to get my PhD, but everything just happened 180, and I decided to take some time off and to heal from what happened. I took a year and a half off of work so I can go to therapy and seek a counselor and just find coping mechanisms to what happened, because of how I found out and because of coming across the crime scene. Unfortunately, that was very traumatizing, and I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. So I had to seek a counselor to be able to to cope with what happened and to live my life, because unfortunately, PTSD causes a lot of, it causes depression, it causes a lot of anxiety. And I felt like I couldn't go about my life without having to address that first. And unfortunately, my PTSD didn't show up until about a year after, because the brain has a way of survival where it shuts itself in order to keep going and to survive. But unfortunately, when you suppress that, it shows up later on. And that happened. So it was really important for me to get the help that I needed. But it really also helped when I was doing public events and speaking about what happened to Nadia. It was a really great way for me to heal, which is why I was on the media a lot. At first, it was just thrown into my lap because they needed to interview me and to talk about what happened. But later on, mm-hmm. when I was asked to do public speaking events, I felt like it really helped for me to talk about Nadia, for me to heal from what happened and for me to process it. And so that was really important. And I feel, because it was so rewarding and because it felt so good to educate people and talk about Nadia's story, I decided to create that foundation so that I continue to do this and hopefully have this as my career, as the foundation, and being able to implement more programs and to have these educational components more across Alberta and hopefully maybe throughout the country eventually. So that's the biggest goal that I have right now. But a lot of the time with grief, you really don't know how to address it because there's no process. You know, a lot of the times it was shown as something that was linear. There's five steps to it, you know, acceptance, denial, and all those. But grief is so much more tricky than that. Everybody processes it differently. The rest of my family, they just decided they needed to you know, cope and stay at home and process what happened. Whereas for me, I felt like I had to talk about it, you know, so we all went about it different ways, even though we all experienced the same thing. So it helped a lot for me to keep telling Nadia's story, but also to know that people were listening. That was really important as well.
Yeah, I actually had my very last guest actually was Melody Chardon, who is a grief recovery specialist and life coach. So she actually did mm-hmm. talk a couple of weeks ago about the grief process. And echoing what you're saying, I mean, everybody handles it differently, and you know, how the brain will suppress something that is incredibly painful until there is a readiness to actually step into it and work through it. And you can't just, you know, cover mm-hmm. it up and just sort of keep piling good things on top of bad, because eventually it'll just break through and it'll show itself in other ways. So it really is
exactly
a critical thing to learn in life how to deal with grief, because ultimately, whether it's the loss of somebody who's dear to us, or whether it's a job mm-hmm. loss, a relationship loss, I mean, there's a lot of different losses in life that cause us to be sad
yes.
and cause us to need to heal from them. So I was curious, you know, I mean, how do you get through a tragedy like this? And you've shared that You've done a lot of talking about it, which is one of the classic things, you know, to allow the person the space to talk about, you know, even if it's the same thing over and over and over and over again, as a great friend, mm-hmm. really just to be able to listen and be with the person and let them express the frustration and get it out, get sadness out, is such an important piece to be a good friend.
Yeah, and but the tricky part as well is you never know when it's going to hit you. You can, for me, it's a lot of the times that where I can talk about the story 100 times and then the one time is when I break down and I cry, but I never see it coming, because that's the tricky part is with grief, it can hit you at any time. In the beginning, you know, I was living minute by minute, not knowing how I was feeling. And now it's allowed me more to kind of see my emotions when they're about to come up. Sometimes, again, it just smacks you randomly and you never see it coming. But a lot of the time, as time passes, you get to see these moments, or you get to heal from the triggers as well. So the triggers used to be songs or pictures or videos. At first, I would have a panic attack, and now it's more kind of like thinking about the good memories instead, and thinking about who Nadia was and the fact that she was a 22-year-old woman, not just, you know, the 15 minutes, unfortunately, where she died. She had 22 years to her life. So thinking about that more rather than the way she died, it took forever for me to associate the triggers with that rather than the way that she passed away. But through, you know, just like time and through therapy and through the help of my friends and family, it really helped me transition to looking at the good memories instead of the tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the resources that are available. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'll do is when I post the replay for this, I'll put some of those local resources that I've been referred and recommended to I'll put those links in the pages here. People mm-hmm. can also go to your website. I know that you have some articles that are on there and other helpful resources. So the money that is raised through the foundation, it goes towards education, and it also supports some of the other groups, the shelters as well, I think, if I recall what I read correctly.
Yes, so we're unfortunately all of the initiatives that we had through the foundation, it's been amazing, but it's all been volunteer. The donations are going to help a little bit with just our projects, but I will also donate a portion of that to the Calgary Women's Emergency Shelter, and especially because right now it's the holidays, and again, we see that donations have gone down in Alberta because of our economy, so in any way that I can help through donations would be great. So just through my website at nadiashopefoundation.com, the proceeds will go both to my foundation as well as the Women's Shelter.
Excellent. So donations, nadiashopefoundation.com. And
yes.
certainly when it comes to donations, when I put together the concept for the book, that is one of the things that I also wanted to bring into my business was the concept of social enterprise. So I do a buy one, give one. So for every copy of the book that's purchased, I donate a copy to Women's Shelter Foundation or not-for-profit. So, you know, there have been stacks of books that have gone to the YWCA, to, you know, Making Changes, to BPW, to Press Angels. There's a variety of different groups. Certainly the Women's Shelter is one place that is on my list for donations as well. So what's next for you? Because this has been such a huge, it's tragedy, but it feels like it's turning now into triumph. As you say, the moments of grief that are uncontrollable, that just bubble up, sounds like it's less frequent. And you've done so much of the healing work already. You've done a lot of education. You're out talking with other groups about some of the preventative, the signs to watch for, etc. So what's next for you? And how could we potentially support you?
Thank you. What's next is definitely to bring these presentations to Calgary. I'm wanting to have the Calgary Police Service team up with my foundation so that we can go to all the high schools in Calgary. Just because it is, I feel like it's my hometown, and I was mostly raised here, and I really want to be able to go to the youth and talk about domestic abuse and Nadia's story. That's my first component and what I want to do right now. As well, we're hoping to become a charity, the foundation. So that's a little bit of a process, but we're in the works of having that as well, so that we can start doing fundraisers, and hoping to do that around the time of the anniversary, which is in March. So that's the next step. But really, what I thought was going to be like a pilot program and only for this year, the presentations, I really found that I've really enjoyed doing them, and the youth have been so responsive with coming up to me afterwards to talk about what happened or apologize, or a lot of the youth felt really emotional. And so the presentations have been doing so well that I really want to hopefully get this to as many cities as I can. So that's kind of going to be the main project for the foundation.
Okay. So the vision of going to law school, do you think that will resurface at some point? Are you wanting to go down that path, or is this now the new direction for you?
To go to law school? Oh, that's just personally right now, because school was really overwhelming. I feel it's not the right time for me to go to law school right now, but it might be later on, I think, in my future, maybe in a few years. I just know that I don't have the capacity yet to go back to school. I love school, but I felt like I needed a break. I was in school for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have great admiration for the process, the healing that you've done, the work that you're doing now, what you're sharing. You know, it really is a story of tragedy to triumph, to get this important messaging out to the people that need it, and certainly, you know, the dating time frame, you know, for young women is a perfect learning opportunity and a way for them to, you know, take what they're hearing and start asking themselves some serious questions as they start going through, you know, dating and relationships. And it's very, very important work. So thank you for taking that on. And whether it was a desire or just, you know, a compulsion or a mechanism for healing, whatever it is, it's important work. So I encourage all of our listeners to, particularly, as you say, at this time of year, to head to nadiasfoundation.com, find out a little bit more about the organization, make a donation. And what I'm also going to do is extend a gift to anyone listening as well. If you're curious about, you know, how you can develop your own confidence, have more confident conversations, more confident language, to download on my website, there's a link that you can download a 3-chapter excerpt of my book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, as a free donation. Just click on wordswomenandwisdom.com. And there's a joyful 2020 sunrise picture. If you click on those links, there's a couple of different resources that you can get access to that are all around confidence. And then the link with the 3-chapter excerpt. And that would be my gift for today as well. So thank you, Nadia, for sharing. So important. Thank you for your honesty throughout this share. It's pretty powerful work, and great admiration for what you're doing. And if you are also looking for volunteers for, you know, hosting some of these events, again, you know, connect with Nadia through her website. And I certainly hope that this is going to make an impact for all of the people that are listening today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a really great pleasure talking to you.
Yeah. I'm just going to go breathe and have a nice hot cup of tea now.
Yes, I know, me too. I'm just like, I need to take some time. I need to take some time to, like, just decompress.
Okay. Well, yeah, do that. Deep breaths, and look forward to staying in touch, Nadia. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me again. I hope you have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye for now.